It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The head of the World Football Federation resigns his post. Sepp Blatter, president of the World Football Federation, FIFA, abruptly resigned his post Tuesday in the midst of an unfolding corruption scandal. Blatter had been just reelected for a fifth term Friday. He told a Zurich news conference he'll remain at his post until a successor is named. It's good news to Greg Dyke, chairman of the English Football Association.
FIFA would never get sorted out while he was there, and it is a deeply flawed, possibly corrupt organisation that needs, you know, needs a lot of work. And that wasn't going to happen while he was there. So he's gone. I mean, when I left on Friday night, I was interviewed by quite a lot of people and I said, look, this, he'll never last 4 years. This won't sustain. But even I couldn't have dreamt that he'd be gone by Tuesday.
The 79-year-old FIFA chief had repeatedly professed his innocence throughout days of adverse publicity about indictments against FIFA executives for their alleged corrupt activities and multi-million-dollar bribe-taking. In Burundi, more street protests against President Pierre Nkurunziza's bid for a third term in elections scheduled this month and just coming 3 days ahead of scheduled parliamentary elections. This protester said Mr. Nkurunziza should withdraw his candidacy in order for the country to have peace. Protesters clashed with police Tuesday who used tear gas. Some witnesses reported hearing gunfire. Protests since late April have left at least 20 dead. Regional leaders have called for a delay of at least 6 weeks in the elections amid ongoing tensions. The country's electoral commission is reportedly considering alternative dates. Meanwhile, the U.S. urged East African leaders to send a high-level delegation to Burundi to repeat opposition to the president's bid for a third term. This is VOA News. President Obama has signed into law a controversial measure ending the government's massive collection of telephone call data intended to prevent terrorist attacks. It follows days of heated debate in Congress. Under the new rules, telephone companies and not the National Security Agency will collect and hold on to the phone call records of U.S. citizens. Federal investigators will be required to seek a court order to examine those records. Former NSA contractor Edward Snowden, who for 2 years fled the U.S. and revealed details of the secret data collection process, said the program has been ineffective.
We've had the Boston Marathon bombings, for example, where the United States government knew who these individuals were in advance of the attack. They were already identified and known to the intelligence services. But despite the fact they were watching everybody in the country, they didn't thwart the attack. And the question is why? The answer there is because when you have individuals like me who are ultimately responsible for this going into a desk every morning and trying to search through the world's communications from the previous day, the previous week, the previous month, you realize very quickly that if we collect everything, we understand nothing.
Critics said the program was a government invasion of privacy. Proponents say it would make the country less safe. Divers are searching Wednesday for a capsized passenger ship on China's Yangtze River looking for survivors. After it capsized late Monday in a violent storm, the Xinhua News Agency says only 14 people have been rescued, 7 bodies recovered, more than 430 are missing. The United States Tuesday acknowledged published reports senior U.S. officials met in Oman last week with representatives of the Yemeni Houthi rebel movement. Marie Harf is a U.S. spokesperson.
We used that meeting to reinforce our view that there can only be a political solution to the conflict in Yemen and that all parties, including the Houthi, should commit to participation in the UN-led political process. And they were really focused on getting the different political constituencies to attend the planned talks in Geneva, again, including the Houthis.
The rebels control a large part of Yemen. Meanwhile, exiled President Abu Mansur has reportedly agreed to meet without precondition with rebels under U.N. auspices in Geneva. Assistant U.S. Secretary of State Ann Sherman has criticized Myanmar, also known as Burma, for its treatment of the Rohingya minority group. She spoke in Bangkok Wednesday, a day after touring refugee camps in Indonesia, where hundreds of Rohingya and other migrants have been temporarily sheltered. Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir was sworn in Tuesday for another 5-year term. Mr. Bashir pledged an era of national unity and stability. He promised a new constitution, a fight against corruption, improving the economy, and bringing relations with the West back to what he called their natural state. Mr. Bashir has ruled Sudan for a quarter century. He's under international indictment for genocide following the long struggle in Darfur. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan suspends a UN representative, but the Secretary General condemns the action.
Mr. Lanzer was already going to be set to leave South Sudan the month of June. So it's confusing why, at this stage, South Sudan would take this decision to expel him.
Farhan Haq is the deputy spokesman for UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. We'll talk with a South Sudanese who has been on a hunger strike in front of the White House to bring attention to the war in his country. And Sierra Leone arrests the lawmaker for taking part in a traditional burial ceremony.
After the passage of the emergency rules by Parliament, there is a standing regulation that nobody should undertake safe burial without reference to NAC or to the medical authority.
Ibrahim Bankabo is the advisor to Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. A week drama in Sierra Leone educates citizens how to prevent Ebola. Zimbabwe gives ultimatum to city vendors to relocate, and Europe consider a boycott as FIFA corruption scandal divides football. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan has suspended the United Nations humanitarian coordinator to South Sudan, Toby Lancer. South Sudan officials were not immediately available to say why Mr. Lancer had been suspended, but UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon Monday condemned the move, calling on the South Sudan government to immediately reverse its decision.
We at the UN were informed by the Sudanese authorities some days back, actually, about their intention to expel Mr. Lanzer. Mr. Lanzer was already going to be set to leave South Sudan this coming month, near the month of June. Just later in June, he is to take up his position as a regional humanitarian coordinator in the Sahel region of West Africa. And in fact, just last week, that is to say the Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, announced the appointment of Eugene Owusu of Ghana as Mr. Lanzer's replacement in South Sudan. So it's confusing why, at this stage, South Sudan would take this decision to expel him. And we have condemned it, and we've called on the government of South Sudan to reverse its decision.
So they didn't give any reasons for expelling him?
I don't speak for the government of South Sudan, so it would be up to them to clarify what their reasoning is. For us, in any case, as with all of the international civil servants who work for the United Nations, Mr. Lanzer is supposed to be able to go about his work without hindrance from any government.
And how did you get the word that they were going to expel him? Was it in a diplomatic note? Or
there have been communications between the government of South Sudan and the UN mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS.
And when is Mr. Lanzer supposed to leave South Sudan?
The expectation is that towards the late part of June, towards the end of June, he would take up his position in the Sahel, and Mr. Owusu would come to replace him here in South Sudan.
But under the expulsion order, what time frame did they give him to get out of the country?
I believe that they're not allowing him in. He was, in fact, outside right now. I believe the idea is that they're not allowing him back into the country at this stage, which is unacceptable to us.
That was Farhan Haq, a deputy spokesman for UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. He was speaking with Karen Zait Vogel of VOA South Sudan In Focus program. Since May 15 this year, South Sudan-born activist and former slave Simon Deng has been on a hunger strike in front of the White House in Washington to appeal to President Barack Obama to help end the civil war in his country. Deng said he has had to return to his home in New York this week to be near his family because his body has started to deteriorate. He tells me he will return to Washington to resume his hunger strike to push President Obama to become a peace broker in South Sudan.
I'm calling on the American leadership, in particular the President of the United States, to become a peace broker between the two warrior factions in southern Sudan, those whom are slaughtering themselves in which almost 200,000 deaths in southern Sudan.
You have been in front of the White House. Have you had anyone, say, or from the White House or any U.S. government official responding to your hunger strike?
We did have somebody from the White House, unofficially, who did come out twice.
But right now you are in New York, is that correct?
Yes, I came to New York this morning, just close to my family, because my body deteriorated. And being far away to them, we don't know what will happen. Being on a hunger strike for almost 3 weeks now.
So what do you mean your body deteriorated?
You know, you have to understand that the difficulties to be on a hunger strike, to go longer instead of just a quick hunger strike.
One would say that why not make your appeal to the warring faction leaders in South Sudan, President Salva Kiir and then the former Vice President Riek Machar? Why don't you make your appeal directly to them?
Well, it is a good point that you're raising. If they happen to be people of concern about the life of their people, innocent people whom are dying, one would have gone and appealed to them. But let's first say, if they are the one brought the tsunami catastrophe on the people of southern Sudan, 4 million are starving to death, I'm sorry, and 2 million refugees, 1 million more gone back to the northern Sudan, 105,000 are under the United Nations protection at the moment we're speaking, is it these individuals the one that you can appeal to them?
This conflict has been going on now for more than a year. What would you like for other South Sudanese to do?
I would like the Southern Sudanese to look at one another in the eye and then come to realization that Southern Sudan, it is there for all of them. It is not belong to one tribe. It is not belong to the president, and it is not belong to the vice president. When we, the Southern Sudanese, went and cast our ballot for referendum, we cast it knowing that we are going to be in that country regardless of our ethnicity, regardless of where we come from, in which that we have to play allegiance to the nation, not to the tribe.
So when do you hope to return to Washington?
I will return to Washington anytime, because I just want the President of the United States to look into the camera and spell it out and said what the African Union are asking for, the European Union are asking for, the IGAD even themselves are asking for, that peace have to be the ultimate goal for the people of southern Sudan.
That was South Sudan-born activist and former slave Simon Deng. He was speaking with me from New York City. Zimbabwe vendors have been given a one-week ultimatum to either voluntarily move out of the areas they are working in or be forced out by the army or the police. The ultimatum was issued Monday by local government minister Ignatius Chombo.
We were simply telling the residents of Harare and the other local authorities that appropriate vending sites have been identified by our local authorities. So those who are vending in streets and vending in undesignated places have been asked to move to appropriately designated places so that they don't continue to break the law.
Is there a time frame for this?
They've been given a week to do so.
But their concern has been that the areas that have been designated are not good for business.
They will be good for business because you've got to advertise the place so that people know where you are located and what kind of wares can be found in a good area. It doesn't make sense to have 6,000 people in an area designated for 3,000 people. It just creates disorder and mayhem.
But do you have the manpower to enforce this move, Dr. Chombo?
Oh, yes, we do have the Zimbabwe Republican Police, the local and the city authorities, its own police personnel to enforce that. I don't see any problem. But we just need to want it done without sufficient warning and the notice given to the vendors.
That was Zimbabwe local government minister Ignatius Chombo speaking with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe service. The ultimatum has now been well received by the Zimbabwe National Vendors Union. National Director Samuel Wadzai says they will resist the government's ultimatum.
We were invited to a meeting just an hour before the meeting actually started. The meeting was basically an opportunity for ministers to tell us that they have decided to remove all vendors from their operating vending throughout the country. Present were local authority mayors and also in the body chairpersons in the meeting. I think every town was covered in Zimbabwe. So they were instructed to work with the police and the army to make sure that they remove vendors from their current operating site.
We understand that there were some kind of threats against you. Is it true?
Yes, yes, yes. Threats were made. Yes, they said that if we don't encourage our members to forget their current operating policies, there will be consequences. There was an official from the army. Unfortunately, I did not get his name, who actually, you know, displayed his muscular, you know, presentation to the effect that if we don't abide by the instruction, we will face consequences. But we'd like to tell the army and the police that we don't want to fight anyone. We are not military. We are vendors. We are entrepreneurs. We are trying to look after our families. And no one, one of the women, can make me leave my workplace. They should create employment for us if they want us to leave. You know, vending. They should create employment. There are no jobs, however, no. So I can opt to be killed other than to go home and see my son die. So it's a non-starter. It's a non-starter that I can repeat. It will not happen.
That was Zimbabwe National Vendors Union Director Samuel Wazai speaking with Blessing Zulu from Harare. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 2nd. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 and a half minutes past the hour. An advisor to Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma says the president wants all Ebola-related laws enforced to the letter, irrespective of who is are found to be violation of these laws. This comes as Sierra Leone police on Monday arrested Ali Badara, a member of parliament from the ruling All People's Congress, APC party, for participating in a traditional burial ceremony of his father in the northern district of Cambia. Sierra Leone and Guinea are still struggling to be declared Ebola-free like Liberia. Ibrahim Benkabo says all Sierra Leoneans must follow the country's anti-Ebola laws.
After the passage of the emergency rules by Parliament, there is a standing regulation that nobody should undertake safe burial without reference to NAC or to the medical authorities. Therefore, whenever somebody died, all you needed to do was to call 117 and the burial team would appear to help you bury the remains of a relative or a friend. But, of course, in this particular case, this lawmaker, member of parliament from the Cambia district, lost his father over the weekend. And then there were arrangements to bury the remains of his father. And he took part in the process. He provided leadership in the whole process. And people were touching and playing with this dead body. There is no proof that he died of Ebola. But the rules are very clear that whether it's Ebola or not, because we are not too certain, we want to be very certain that the people do not touch or play with dead bodies at this time. So this was what happened. So the police arrested him for violating a very important component of the rule governing the fight against Ebola.
As you said, there's no proof that the father of this lawmaker died of Ebola. I mean, some understanding that, in fact, the father may have died from old age, I mean, as old as, what, 90 or 100 years old?
He was about 100 years old. It is not a matter of whether he died by Ebola or not. It is a matter of violating the rules, because since we do not have proof that this person may have died of Ebola, there is a standing regulation backed by a parliamentary emergency rule that whenever somebody dies, he should be buried according to the rules laid down by the institution in charge of Ebola.
This lawmaker, is he a member of the ruling party or the opposition party?
He comes from a part of the country where the ruling party has dominance. The response to that question is yes, a member of the ruling party. But notwithstanding that, and the law must take its course. And that is the president's position.
Sierra Leone, at least, is trying to be like Liberia, that is to be declared Ebola-free. But it appears to mean that more and more cases keep coming up. I hear now your president, Ernest Bai Koroma, is concerned about a new Ebola case that came about. What can you tell us?
Well, of course, may I state that Sierra Leone is at close to 98% Ebola-free. At the moment, we are talking about Ebola only in two or three districts, single digits. Cambia district, Poloko district once in a while, and then the parts of the western area once in a while. But the rest of the country is Ebola-free.
Ibrahim Ben Kabo is the advisor to Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. A weekly soap opera in Sierra Leone uses drama to not just entertain, but also to educate citizens how to prevent Ebola. The Red Cross sponsored show, known as Advice, airs each week on both TV and radio. A spokesperson for the Sierra Leone Red Cross, Patrick Masekwai, who also writes the script, tells Ricky Stryak that the show has become a hit in Sierra Leone.
The idea came as a result of a band that was placed on public gathering for the fact that is one of the ways people can contract the virus. And we thought it necessary that we can raise the awareness of the public without doing a public live performance. We can do a soap opera, which people can get information about the preventive measures and control about Ebola. So we developed a skit, and the skit is being performed by some volunteers and some of us that are part of the development of the skit, and also using community people.
What kind of community reaction have you gotten from the soap opera?
The community reaction has been really very good, because some send text messages, because the soap opera is normally played in between our radio and television programs. After the presentation, then we now do a slot of the soap opera. And after that, we open the phone line for reactions from community members. And we've been receiving lots of very good reactions in terms of strengthening knowledge. People have acquired a lot of knowledge, you know, on the presentations we've been doing using the radio as well as the television. We make use of the issue of the day. If we realize that people are still touching, people are still washing dead bodies, then we can take that issue or the topic and then coin a drama aspect of it. We performed it, and we do a sound effect. Then that is being a screen, and it is also being aired through the radio.
Why a soap opera? Why not just a regular TV show? Why are you calling it a soap opera?
We choose soap opera because we see that after the proliferation of the Nigerian films in Sierra Leone, people have grown interest in watching televisions, in watching Nigerian films. So we thought it that we can use theater to entertain, theater to educate, and to also inform. And we are not adding much of comic or comedy, you know, on the soap opera that we do. But we make sure that we add issues, or we add educative information in this opera in order to really strengthen the knowledge of people.
Patrick Masekwai is the communications coordinator for the Sierra Leone Red Cross. He was speaking to Ricky Shryaki from Freetown. The world of football continues to be rocked by allegations of corruption at FIFA, the sports world governing body. There are now questions over whether bribes were paid to secure votes for hosting the World Cup. It comes days after the re-election of controversial FIFA president Sepp Blatter. As Henry Richwald reports for VOA, European nations will hold an emergency meeting this week to discuss what action to take over the crisis.
Arriving in Havana Monday for an exhibition match between the New York Cosmos and the Cuban national team, one of the greatest players the sport has ever seen added his voice to the scandal engulfing world football. Pelé, who won three World Cups with Brazil, gave his backing to FIFA's re-elected president, Sepp Blatter. I was in favour of Sepp Blatter's re-election, Pelé told reporters. I was a director for FIFA, and I am part of FIFA, and it's better to have someone with experience. The United States indicted several FIFA officials on corruption charges last week. Swiss officials are investigating the process that awarded the 2018 FIFA World Cup to Russia and the 2022 event to Qatar. South Africa hosted the 2010 World Cup, the first finals held on African soil. The head of South African football admitted Sunday that FIFA had made a $10 million payment in 2008 to the Confederation of North, Central American and Caribbean Association Football. However, he insisted it was not a bribe, but rather meant to support grassroots soccer among African diasporas. African support for Sepp Blatter remains strong, says sports analyst Philip Barker.
He took the World Cup to Africa, so he will always be revered in that part of the world for bringing the world game to them and giving them their fair chance to really take centre stage.
Former football administrator for Zambia, Simata Simata, says African football has benefited from FIFA investment under Sepp Blatter.
People are saying to themselves, if Sepp Blatter goes, these projects might just close down and we are back to square one. So let's keep him for as long as we can.
But it's not only FIFA members that wield power. The corporate sponsors are watching events closely, says Barker.
Football is seen as a force for good. If FIFA, and by dint football, then becomes a negative thing, then sponsors are going to want to disassociate themselves with it.
Speaking Saturday, the FIFA president appeared to suggest his critics were motivated by envy. There are signs that don't lie, Sepp Blatter said. The Americans were candidates for the 2022 World Cup and they lost. The English were candidates for the 2018 World Cup and they lost. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin with football. Nigeria's Safarinico Scala will oversee the electoral process. Staying in Zurich, Blatter says that until he steps down from office, he will focus his energy on effecting far-reaching and unprecedented reforms. These include, among other things, deep-rooted structural changes, reducing the size of the FIFA Executive Committee, introducing term limits for and integrity checks on FIFA Executive Committee members. On a more footballing note, Ghana hosts on the away goal rule to triumph over Argentina at the men's FIFA Under-20 World Cup in Wellington, New Zealand on Tuesday. Today, Wednesday, tournament debutants Senegal seek to get their campaign back on track when they face Colombia in a must-win encounter in Hamilton. Senegal lost their opening match 3-0 to Portugal, while Mali plays Serbia in Dundee. Should Mali win, they'll be the first Africans to qualify for the knockout phase of the tournament, having beaten Mexico 2-0 in their opening encounter. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, June 3rd.
The name is Ekesu Joseph, Orun Bayoji, a number of people. Then they use this year group, Daybreak Africa, to say congratulations to His Excellency, President Muhammadu Buhari, on the occasion of his investiture last week, Friday. Orun is the General Secretary to Nafida Peace Multipurpose Farmer Society. I have a pledge to help his aviation interest. He's in our best place. Thank you.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of news. Sepp Blatter, president of the World Football Soccer Federation, FIFA, abruptly resigned Tuesday in the midst of an unfolding corruption scandal. Blatter had been re-elected to a fifth term as president just 4 days earlier. That's it for this Wednesday, June 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Mark Ouma, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcast. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOANews.com.